In the late 70s, Eric's nightclub in Liverpool was a major punk venue. The Sex Pistols, The Clash, Blondie, many artists began their tours there. One of the regulars upstairs at Eric's was Bill Drummond.
Myself and this whole gang used to go to the club every week. It was only open one night a week. We worked just across the road from it. And for some reason, we decided to form a band. I'd never played properly in a band before, but three of us decided to form a band. That became big in Japan. There was members came and went. We sacked a lot. There was only one way to leave the band, we used to say, and that was get sacked. And we ended up with a settled lineup, which lasted about 9 months, and that was Ian Brody, who's just had a hit under the name The Lightning Seeds. He was the other guitarist. Holly Johnson was the bass player. Budgie, who's in the band, he was the drummer. And a lady called Jane Casey, who was our singer. We'd sacked Holly Johnson, actually, because he was always turning up late for rehearsals. And we got this bloke called Dave Balfin, and that was just a last-ditch attempt. I mean, he was somebody. I have to admit, we'd gone through all these people to try and get new bass players. And nobody could, you know, when you said play, it's in A, nobody knew what we meant. Even we knew what to play in A meant, but nobody else seemed to know. And we ended up with this character called Dave Balfin. He did know how to play in A.
Big in Japan was a kind of in-house band, and I joined them. Previous to that, I was from across the water, as they refer to it in Liverpool, a woolly back from the Wirral. And we used to hang out with a gang of us who were in a group called Dalek, I Love You, and Orchestra Maneuvers, and a few other people who were in and out of those groups. And we used to see all these weirdos hanging out in Eric's and not know many of them or know their name because they'd been mentioned in local fanzines or on local TV or something. But they were all well too weird and probably too homosexual for us or something in those days. You know, it was very exciting, very interesting. Again, similar to punk, it was the first time one felt one was directly connected with something that was real rather than just reading about it.
Despite being talked about now with reverent tones, Big in Japan never really were very big in Japan, or anywhere else for that matter. No record company would ever sign them up. So Dave Balfe and Bill Drummond did that very 80s thing, a very new thing at the time too, and set up their own label.
Yeah, the punk thing inspired people to sort of get up and do, you know, supposedly get up and do things themselves. But really all the major punk bands were on the major labels, and that get up and do something yourself was really quite a sort of... In some ways it could be seen as a cynically contrived thing to hype those bands up. When we started, there was nothing, there was no indie distribution. David Balfe and I would sit in his father's car and drive around the country. We found out where you could press records, and then independent pressing plants that took work outside of the majors really would start pressing up school brass bands, LPs and stuff like that, and they, you know, had no idea what we were about. Once we got our records pressed up, we would drive around the country in his car with a pile of sleeves that we had printed up at a local printers in Liverpool, and these records, and we'd run into shops and say the record, well, you know, do you want to buy any of this? And they'd put it on and they'd go, what's this? And they'd sort of feel sorry for you and buy about three or four or five, and then you'd rush out and you'd sleeve up three or four or five and take them back in and sell them for as much as you can get. And you'd have to negotiate a price as well. If you could get 58 pence, you were doing well. first record we put out was actually a Big in Japan EP of all stuff that we, you know, tapes I had lying around. And then I'd asked a couple of friends, or I told a couple of friends what we were doing, you know, that I was going to form a label, and I asked them, do you want to put out a record? And Julian Cope, who'd sort of been an arch rival stroke friend for the past couple of years in Liverpool, he said he'd got a new group, but he'd got a new group every week, and that week it would be, his new group was called The Teardrop Explodes. Sometimes I wonder if you're really living, or what is this feeling you think that you're giving, but you can sit down and write and dismay, or wondering what are all the plans that you laid, but you can watch Rafferty turn into a serial, or you can watch Rafferty turn into a serial, you can watch Rafferty turn into a serial, or just like a cartoon by AAP, oh, it's just like a cartoon by AAP, oh, yeah. Oh, whether to phone you, or whether to see, I never do anything, you never do things for me. I just wander around, but you can watch Rafferty turn into a serial, or you can watch Rafferty turn into a serial, you can watch Rafferty turn into a serial. So here comes my hand and my hands just behind, so yeah.
Although The Teardrop Explodes were Julian Cope's band, Dave Balfe fulfilled a number of different roles.
Again, there was a lot of personnel changes. I started out as a manager, and you know, I'd engineered the first single and produced it, and then myself and Bill Drummond, you know, we'd been the label, we became the managers, then the keyboard player left and I was in the keyboard player, and obviously I was quite obsessed with how that side was changing because I was doing it all, and we became more sophisticated. It was very arty and very simple at the beginning, and it became more sophisticated. We started learning a lot more, and as we worked with Clive Langer, he taught us a lot.
Clive Langer himself looks at that period not so much as learning new techniques as rediscovering old ones.
Because of punk, everything had kind of got pretty black and white as far as making records were concerned. I mean, it was like, if you can get a really good drums, bass and guitar sound, you had a good simple song, that was enough. And then when we worked with bands like Teardrops, and we could experiment with brass, it was almost like a new thing again. Or with Madness, when we had like pizzicato strings on It Must Be Love, it was like a new thing, whereas it wasn't really a new thing at all. I mean, it was, you know, in the 50s and 60s, pop records had those elements in them. But because punk had come along and cleaned everything out of the way, it seemed like we were adventurers.
In We Don't Need No Education, top record producers were talking to Phil Archer. Tomorrow at the same time, we'll hear more of the music that was around in the early 80s in part two of Rollover Sid Vicious. This look at the music of the 80s is brought to you with British Telecom, answering to you this Christmas time.